Hey, ready? First off, I'd just like to thank the staff, the coaches, and especially the scouts for all their effort and energy they put into this every year. I'd like to recognize Jamal Stevenson for his leadership as he kind of guides us through the process all the way back when we had our first meetings in December, through our February meetings, and then as we all come together as one group and finalize our draft board. I feel very strong about this draft. I think the depth of this draft class, especially in some of the areas that we'll be looking at, are very significant, I think, through the mid-rounds. And for us to have an extra third and an extra fourth this year is going to pay dividends for us. Other thing I'd like to point out is just working and seeing Coach Shermer at the end of the season with the new offensive coaches coming in and sitting down with Coach Zimmer and Coach Shermer and identifying the traits that we're looking for on the offensive side of the ball and what's going to fit his scheme. I know we're very in tune to what we're looking for on a defensive side, and I think we feel very strongly that we can identify those players in this draft that are going to fit the specific skill set that we're going to need to perform in Coach Shermer's offense. So I think it'll be a big weekend for us. I know we're going to add a lot of quality players, and there'll be a lot of new faces going into this next season. So I'll open it up for questions.
Is it more of a challenge or less of a challenge when you don't have a first-round pick?
I wouldn't say if it's more or less. I think you approach every round, and we approach the board every way, the same way every year. So we put as much emphasis into the first round as we do into the fourth and fifth round. And I know probably over the weekend and finishing up yesterday, really honed in on the sixth, seventh rounders. I know I have to do a better job of college free agency. We will be much more aggressive in that area, something that we haven't been in the past. I know with how we planned our roster going into 17 and losing a lot of our backup-type vet players, that these young players from last year's draft class and this year's draft class coming in are going to have to play a significant role on this roster.
How about the quarterback position? How does that look to you in the draft overall?
Yeah, we looked at the quarterbacks. We didn't spend a lot of time on the first couple up there. We're going to treat the quarterback position just like any other position as we go down through the draft. And if there's, you know, we spent time on a lot of those guys. I know Kevin Stefanski, who's now coaching the quarterbacks, and Pat Shermer spent a lot of time down at the Senior Bowl. We spent a lot of time with them at the Combine. So, you know, I'm not going to say we're not going to take one, and we're going to take one. I think we will just see how the draft unfolds and who's there and who's not there.
Rick, when you talk about needing to fill in some of the depth and what have you, does that affect the draft from the standpoint that maybe you might be looking for some more ready-to-play players than maybe down-the-road guys or anything like that?
I think we're always, and we've always had the philosophy of just following our board. And I think where we're picking in the second round, we've already pounded it, and we're going to do it again this afternoon, the potential scenarios that are going to be looking at us. And whether that's, whatever position, we'll be prepared. We also talked about potentially any of those guys that may be developed in the first round for some reason falling to us in the second round. And is that may not be a need, but is that talent too great to pass up? Because he's going to eventually be on the field and would hopefully be able to come on the field early his rookie year if you're picking that high. So we're not going to box ourselves into saying, well, we have this need, so we have to take this position in this round. I think as you go down through the draft, you have to understand the depth of each position. So if you know potentially you can get a position in a fourth round that may equate to that same value in the third round, then you may wait and take that position in the fourth round. Where if you look at your draft board and you see the depth after the first seven or eight players is not there, then and they're equal in ability, then you're going to address a need that way. So you just really have to understand where the depth of each position is in this draft and where you can hold and where you know you have to probably take that position if it's on your draft board at that time and you have that evaluation on him.
Rick, you haven't hesitated in the past to move up into the first round to grab guys if you like them there. Do you see a scenario like that being playable, or do you need enough more guys so you want to hold on to some of those picks?
I think just looking at where this is, one, I think it's a pretty significant jump and pretty costly to go from where we're picking in the second round all the way back into the first. I think there are a lot of quality players through the second, third, and fourth rounds that can be significant players for us next year coming in. But you never know if something falls out of the sky that's just too good or you make that happen. But I would say as if I'm standing here today, that's an unlikely scenario at this point.
Rick, how do you wrestle with evaluating the talent of a guy like Joe Mixon versus when there's video of what happened?
We spend a lot of time with that, not just him, but there's some other players with some issues in this draft. And we are try to do, and I think we do a great job with all of our consultants, with our effort that we put in to spend time with these players. And it's you know, we sit there and it's got to be an organizational decision, and our ownership is included in that. And we present everything we have on paper, what the facts are, what our experts are saying, what type of kid this is. Is it a one-time incident? Is it something that there may be a pattern there that we don't want to deal with? So there's so many other things that aren't reported out there in the media that we know, and we'll sit there and we come up and make, you know, what is the best decision for the organization. And so as we go through these players and players that do have issues and documented issues that are out in the media, we'll make an organizational decision on whether they're on our board or not.
Is it different when there's video? I mean, I know in Ray Rice's case for the league, it was different. I mean, for your guys, whenever there's an actual video that you have to
watch. Well, there's video, which, you know, it makes it hard to watch, to be honest with you. But also, I don't think you can take anything less lightly if it's not on video. It's still the same, and it's still the same situation whether it was on video or not. So I think you can't take anything less light, if that makes sense, if it's not on video.
Has the organization already made a decision on Mixon?
We've made decisions on a lot of players.
Tell us one way or the other.
You can come up. You want to see our draft board afterwards, and come. Yeah.
Typically put the red dots on your guys after you've done all the due diligence, or are there certain cases where you put a dot on before you would like to investigate?
No, it's at different points throughout our process. We finished up some red carded or red dotted players today as we continue to get information, and there's still information coming. I know we still are waiting on some things to come up until Thursday, and the people that are involved in that part of it, I just need to know and have an answer on where these situations stand by Thursday before, you know, the draft starts. So there's still some ongoing things that we have out there, but we'll have everything finalized, and whether they're red dotted or not dotted, probably not until Thursday.
Rick, how much what you accomplished in free agency, how much will that affect how you prioritize things in the draft in terms of positions you target and things like that?
I think you look, you know, especially when you spend some money in free agency, but I don't think it precludes you from what you're going to do on the draft because some of those, you know, free agents and how we structured their contracts, you know, are they 1 year, are they going to be here for five? Are some of the guys that we signed on the offensive line, they have some position flexibility. So when you know the guys that you signed and maybe some of them having some position flexibility, then that enables you to take the best player available. You know, and if you're asking an example, just because we signed two offensive tackles in free agency, doesn't mean if an offensive tackle was there that we wouldn't take him either. Then our job is try to get the best 53 players out there, and then it's the I told Zim I always kick the ball over to him, and then once we get the 53, it's, you know, let's get our best 11 out there on offense, defense, and special teams, and whatever combination that is.
Difference talking to Coach Shermer and that staff and what they look for, is it a pretty big shift in what it was previously under?
From a schematic standpoint, I would leave that up to the coaches. I'm talking just from, you know, looking specifically at things from a personnel standpoint, for example, offensive line. You know, are we going to be a power team, or are we going to be more of a zone scheme type team? So those are all the things when you're talking about offensive linemen. Some of these guys have better skill set and better traits to fit in one scheme than the other. So as we talked about the players and the coaches were in all our meetings, the coaches were, you know, did the group study film with us, just so we can see, as the coaches explain, okay, this is what we're going to require this player to do, and this is why this guy can do it, or this is why this guy can't do it. Very similar to when Zim came in and we started on the defense, and we had a lot of film study on the type of traits that he was looking for on his defense. And I think, you know, we're at that point with our offense right now where we can really identify and look at these players to know if they're going to be able to function and what Pat wants to do or not.
Rick, with Adrian kind of signing with the Saints today, it seems like there's closure here now. Just when you look back on what he meant to the organization, what it was like, your experiences with him, what kind of comes to mind?
Since he's with another team, I'm going to get fired or lose a draft pick? Or no, Adrian, I've said it before, Adrian to me is, since I've been here, the greatest Minnesota Viking to ever put on that uniform. He's a Hall of Fame player. He will go down in the history of one of the greatest rushers in the NFL, if not the greatest. Unique individual, great person. And I said we were very fortunate and feel very blessed that we were part of, you know, for the most part, his whole entire career here in Minnesota.
Rick, would you like to get a contract extension done with Sam Bradford before the season, or are there still answers you're looking for with Teddy Bridgewater before you can commit one way or another?
One, I'm never going to talk about contracts and who we're extending or not extending into the future. We always keep that in-house. I know I've sat with Rob Pruszynski. We were sitting today just looking at those scenarios, and we've already have some plans in place because I know we have some significant young guys coming up here in the future. So that process we've already started planning for, but I won't get into specifics on who or what.
You talked about some guys that you have to look into their backgrounds. With the advent of social media, like what happened with Tunsil and everything, how much do you weigh that? Do you dig deeper now than you have in the past for guys so you're not surprised when things pop up?
Yeah, but some of it, you're still surprised because I don't know what's going to pop up on draft day. I mean, we could have done our due diligence and, you know, we have a great social media staff here, and that's their area of expertise, and I asked them specifically go in and dig on Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, whatever all that stuff is, and tell me what we know about these players. And I know when we go into our formal interviews at the Indianapolis Combine, when they come in here on a top 30, I have a report with pictures and everything, what they're posting on Instagram, what they're posting on all their social media, and if it's something that's red flagged, then we address it with them. And I think some of these players are surprised at what we're able to pull out, you know. But, you know, and I'm not knowledgeable enough if it's, like, private and you have to – how you join into that and stuff. I don't ask questions. I just tell them, you know, what we need. And I know they do a great job in getting as much information, at least, as I know we can.
How much of it is we want to make sure this doesn't happen again, and how much of it is – we don't really want to be associated?
Well, those are decisions that we have to make. And that's why until you have all the answers to the test and have dug in as deep, and that's from evaluations to not only football but psychological evaluations to, you know, all the police reports, talking to people that were associated with that incident, talking to his or people that are close to that situation. I mean, you try to talk and try to get as clear of picture as you can and by any avenue you can. And that's what we try to do with with all these players that we potentially red dot. And once we make that decision, then he's not a Minnesota Viking. But I do believe it has to be from an organization and what's best for this organization. I think when we get the red flags in the beginning of our process, and depending on how talented they are, whether it's fair or not, the less talented you are, the more red flags you have, probably the more likely you're going to get a red dot, because is your talent worth the headache? But the higher you're up on the draft board, you're going to really spend and do your diligence on those players, because if they're that high in your draft board, then you're saying those guys are potential difference makers for your football team. They can help you win and lose games.
Emerson was considered a character risk coming out of college. Do you remember, and went on to prove that, you know, eighth year coming up, proved it was worth the risk. Was there something that happened during that process that assured you that he'd be okay? Or
I don't know if you're ever assured. Is this kid going to mature? Is this kid, how much does it mean to him if football is taken away from him? It's hard to just pinpoint one thing, because just like when you're drafting, you know, everything is subjective, and you're trying to base a subjective opinion off, you know, how much of information that you have. But no one can really say that you can truly predict what's going to happen. You try to, as some friends of mine that are in the special forces, they said, try to minimize your risk as much as possible by getting the most information. But can you eliminate a risk and say that absolutely there's no risk? I don't think you could ever do that, because you don't know. But as long as you're doing your due diligence and minimizing the risk as low as you can get it, then it gives you a chance.
With him being a fourth rounder, does it reach a point where you say it's worth a flyer, whether he messes up?
And I know in the draft room, you know, if they're not red dotted, but they're in a box, and which means they're still alive on our draft board. I mean, if you have a first, second, third round talent on a guy, you may hold and not take him where his talent is. But when you get into fourth, fifth round, is it worth the risk? Because financially, it's not a big of risk either, where it can hurt your club competitively. And, you know, if he does, you know, mess up or has to go, then you didn't financially hurt your football team.
Follow-up question to Bradford. If he doesn't sign an extension, having the franchise tag possibly available, does that potentially, you know, buy you time in your estimation, or also buy you time to see how Teddy Bridgewater recovers and that sort of thing?
Yeah, nothing is concrete or no decisions have been made. You know, Teddy, I can tell you, is our first week of offseason has been incredible. He's been in here working as hard as anyone, fighting his way back. I mean, I wouldn't put it past that kid, you know, how quickly he can come back. But it's still unknown. You know, Bradford was here very first day and leading the group. So we're very fortunate to have both of those players at that position on our roster right now. When those decisions are going to be made, there's no timeline.
In terms of how has the draft changed over the years in terms of guys who are maybe, you know, are sure things? Are there more of them or less of them? Have you ever run into somebody that's a sure thing?
I don't know. Yeah, I wish I knew. I haven't, personally. And you know some guys that have a pretty good chance of being pretty good. But I know for as much time as we evaluate these guys and go over it, you come to a point almost where it's no return, where no one's a for sure thing. But the draft is very subjective. And like I said, you try to do everything you can to minimize the risk when you make those selections by doing your due diligence. And I have no doubt that we do everything we possibly can to do our due diligence. And there's a lot of that's spread out through a lot of different people in this organization to have specific roles in whatever areas we're asking them to explore. But the draft, I mean, if there was for sure things, and maybe every first rounder would been you'd be 100%. But look at the and we have. We've looked at the percentages of what first rounders are. What percent are they going to be, you know, blue top players or red solid starters? What ones are missed? We spend a lot of time on that. On our draft board, some things that, you know, are going to be totally different this year is in the third round, there are so many more compensatory picks than there's ever been. I think there's 8 more third round compensatory picks this year. So what does that do? In a normal draft, okay, now your fourth rounder is not the true value, just saying a fourth rounder is actually pushed down by 8 more players. The other thing that's going to be extremely, I would say, exciting, but there's going to be a lot of activity is this is the first year, I believe, that you can trade those compensatory picks. So there's going to be a lot more movement, I think, because of those picks being able to be traded.
Can you recommend 5 years ago, looking how you rated guys and how they turned out, things like that?
Oh, yeah. Our basic way we do this every year is you have to have a 3-year snapshot. And we go all the way back to 2005 now. And what we graded them as college, what they ended up being as pro, what their pro grades are, how they ended up performing. And you take those two. And then you start, that's when the analytics come spinning back in. And we're to the point now where you can say, well, this guy that made it, that was a red player or a blue player, had out of the 2,500 traits that we looked at, from effective commitment and a psychological score to his arm length to a short shuttle, those were the 3 most important things at the offensive center. Okay, they spin it through their algorithms, bam, this guy is similar to that guy that came out in red, or bam, this guy is similar that failed. So we're really developing every year, and even this year it took another significant step on, I guess we're almost in the process of cloning right now, is maybe the best way to put it.
The college game has changed so much, and what they ask a lot of those guys to do is so different than what they would do in the NFL. Is that made scouting and evaluation and projecting more difficult? Or?
What I think you're seeing in the league is that some of that is evolving up to our level. I mean, I think Zim gave you the fact when our nickel was playing 70% of the defensive snaps, that wasn't like that 10 years ago. But that's because of the athletes and the type of players that are coming out of college now. So I think you still have to, and while I always believe, and I know Coach, you're still going to have to run the ball, play good defense, and to win championships. But our game has evolved a little bit because of the type of athletes that are coming out, and you see us adapting a little bit because that's the players we're choosing.
Time for 2 more. I'm wondering, when evaluating, how close is everyone physically, and how much do you have to look into what kind of person they are? And not character, but like, how important is football to them? Are they more interested in reading books? Are they that kind of stuff? Right?
Oh, yeah. No, that's a major part of it. And every player that I probably missed on and I've learned is that you can have height, weight, speed, all the athletic ability, but if you truly don't have passion for playing this game, and we call them underachievers, and if you have a U on your card, we've learned not to take those guys, regardless of how talented they are. From a physical standpoint, because unless you love what you do when you get up every morning, I don't think you're going to have a chance to have success. And with the pressure and the demand that's on these players and these coaches every Sunday and every week, you better have passion for what you do or you're not going to have a chance. And we've really honed in and focused on that passion part. But all those things are keys in breaking ties for us. Once we do the ability part and have them stacked on the ability part, then all those ancillary things, which are a lot, come in to separate it for us.
Thank you, Brett.
drafted some good players in the second round, Kyle Rudolph, Kendricks. Some of those guys, does it help that maybe they think they should have gone in the first round, they pop perhaps their first round talent, and then they come in with that chip on their shoulder? That's what Kyle Rudolph was talking about today.
Yeah, but hell, I've drafted seventh rounders in college free agents that thought they should. I thought I should have been a first rounder. My brother was. He did. It's, you know, you want those guys. It's just that's the passion for the game and a chip on their shoulder. And I don't think if those guys would have went in the first round, they would have performed any less just because. Because once we get, and I tell all the players once they come in here and we talk about this, once you're a first rounder, seventh rounder, if you're Adam Thielen, who we were fortunate enough and very lucky to find in a, you know, our rookie mini camp, who wasn't even signed after the draft, or Marcus Sherrills, it doesn't matter. What matters is when you come in here, everybody's on a level playing field. And Coach Zimmer and his staff believe in, we want the best 53 players, and I don't care where you're drafted or where you came from. If you're the best 53 player, you're the best 11 on offense or defense, you're going to play. Because we have to win ball games. That's what we're in this business for. Good. Thank you.